Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to A Good Football Show's Recap Podcast. My name is Pat Corain, and in just a few moments here, I'll be joined by everyone from the NBC Sports Edge team who covered the games for us today to go through each game and talk a little bit about, you know, beyond what we can see in the box score, get that, you know, additional context that's going to help you make the right fantasy decisions. Let's get to the games. The Cardinals defeated the Bears 33-22. Arizona is now 7-0 on the road this year. All seven wins have been by double digits. They're the fourth team in history to have six of those. Patrick Daugherty, how were the Cardinals able to keep it rolling on the road here?
Yeah, not to take people too behind the curtain, but we debated if we should like include that stat, if it was like really telling or not. And we were like, yeah, because it's just so weird and amazing. And
yeah,
they have been just like dominating people this year. And like, not just the Bears, they've like beaten lots of really good teams. Like, they're like an interesting team that I feel like none of us believe in. And, you know, today, how did they do this? I mean, Andy Dalton tossing four interceptions, all four of which set up Arizona inside the Bears' 30-yard line. That helped a lot and was one of the main reasons Kyler Murray had only 15 attempts and only, I believe, 123 yards passing. He did not compile at all as a passer, but two passing scores, two rushing scores, like just amazing news across the board with regards to Kyler's injury, because he had 10 rushing attempts by a new season high easily. And the fact, you know, he's doing that coming back from a high ankle sprain, obviously there's zero concern then about his foot from the Cardinals. They think he's healthy. I mean, they know he's healthy. He looked healthy. He was finding the edge as a runner and just looked really, really dangerous. You know, that was an element that had been kind of missing for a few weeks, even before his week 8 injury. He'd kind of gotten away from the running again. So it was really, really good to see that reestablished. And yeah, just, I mean, just again, good field position over and over again. And like, they didn't have to pass and they didn't really want to pass. It was, you know, rainy, it was windy. He seemed to have trouble gripping the ball a little bit, Kyler Murray, actually. But this was all about a good team just punishing a bad team over and over and over again for the Bears' mistakes.
Yeah, from Kyler Murray's perspective, I mean, you have less than 200 yards passing. That's not great, but that's okay when you have 15 attempts. You know, if you have less than 200 yards passing and you had 44 attempts like Mike Glennon had today, that's not so great. But it still kind of yields the same result here for the receivers, where there's just not that much to go around. DeAndre Hopkins has 32 yards, gets in the end zone, but just two receptions on two targets. AJ Green has one target, goes 1 for 14. Zach Ertz has 2 targets, 1 for 10. Christian Kirk had 3 targets, 1 for 4. Rondale Moore, 2 targets, 1 for 8. I mean, just no production from the receivers. What did you see from the target tree here? Like, is there anything that we can take away from this? You know, it's an interesting game because DeAndre Hopkins was back and we're very curious how he was going to slot in.
Yeah, you kind of just have to throw it out because no one had more than 2 catches. No one had more than 3 targets. But I haven't seen the full game snap totals yet. Pro Football Focus, though, at halftime did have DeAndre Hopkins leading in snaps. So that's a good sign. They kind of talked about before the game he might be a little limited. He was on the sideline like a few times where he was like clearly deliberately being rested. But he was always back in, avoided setbacks. You know, the touchdown was this vintage DeAndre. Just, He won a hand fight with Jalen Johnson. He got in a position where only he could make the catch. Kyler delivered a dime, caught it right in the front right corner of the end zone. Just like truly indefensible. That was early in the game. They could have done it more times if they needed to. But like I said, score never dictated taking those kind of shots. And, you know, it might not even have been possible in the weather. So, you know, it's weird because is DeAndre, has he still even had a 10-target game this season? I don't think he had had a 10-target game before the
injury.
I don't
think so. He's had a pretty low target rate.
Yeah, and the targets situation, like, it's not like it's like been cleared up or anything. Everyone's healthy now. Zach Ertz, you know, Zach Ertz and DeAndre Hopkins, I think they only played two games together before DeAndre Hopkins' injury. So the path to like that target, like those monster target totals still isn't there. And, you know, now they have Jalen Ramsey and the Rams in week 14. So it's not like we're going to suddenly get like a new DeAndre, but it certainly seemed like he came back immediately to like at least his top spot in the pecking order. And fantasy managers are just gonna have to keep living with, you know, hopefully touchdowns, but like only like sufficing on 6 to 8 targets with DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, although hopefully the Rams will be able to push them and we get a whole lot more passing attempts from Kyler Murray. And nice to see Kyler Murray and Hopkins back here healthy. What about James Conner in the running game here? A little bit production out of Conner at least.
Yeah, he got the touchdown. It was maybe the play of the day, maybe even better on the DeAndre Hopkins' touchdown. He snagged a one-handed pass. He made a defender miss, and he was like plus 20 yards in the end zone. So a big receiving play from James Conner. But he also kind of – so even with the touchdown, though, he kind of finally had – like it came back down to earth in terms of like his touchdown good fortune because he got stuffed twice from the one-yard line on the ground. Had one or two other carries, I think, inside the 10-yard line, not like true goal line carries, but finally like regressing a little bit to the mean where he's not scoring every single time he gets the ball inside the opponent's 5-yard line. But yeah, he still had the play of the day, still had his 14th touchdown. You know, the variable, of course, is Chase Edmonds, it appears, will be back in week 14. But, you know, James Conner was dominating the goal line touches even before that. But he might be reverting back to, you know, touchdown reliant RB2, one that does score almost every week and still like the high end option he's been these past 3 or 4 weeks without Chase Edmonds.
Yeah, that's important to note. You know, interesting that his play came in the receiving game as well, although it would stand to reason that Chase Edmonds would regain most of his role.
You would, I mean, some people are saying that that would be really nice for some of their teams where let's just say they're down bad, as a Zoomer might say, at the running back position. Maybe this is me.
Let's move to the Bears side here. I mean, David Montgomery, let's get the bright spot. Start with that. He had 8 for 51 as a receiver on 9 targets. Pretty nice. Gets in the end zone as a rusher with 21 carries for 90 yards and a score. So, you know, there was some production here out of the Bears side, and he was named David Montgomery.
Yeah, and you know, 29 touches for 141 yards from scrimmage and a touchdown. You can't really complain about that production. I mean, you take that 9 times out of 10, but it was against the run funnel defense. He did get stymied. He had appeared to have a second touchdown. He was ruled down upon review. 2 plays later, Jimmy Graham dunks a 1-yard target. That was a very unfortunate moment if you were playing David Montgomery, but you would have liked this like slightly more ceiling with that much work against this defense. But yeah, he did his job. 29 touches, like I said, 141 yards for scrimmage. Khalil Herbert, just complete afterthought, even with Andy Dalton throwing one interception after another, even with the rain, you know, making this a game where you want to stay on the ground. Khalil Herbert, like maybe had 4 to 5 touches, and like they have hitched their wagon to David Montgomery, and he's providing reasonably good fantasy returns. You know, next week, the Bears have the Packers, a really, really tough pass defense. So it's hard to believe he's not going to continue to be like shovel, you know, 20 plus touches. So he's really, really locked in as like a high end touch based RB2.
What was going on with Dalton? Like, what were these interceptions stemming from? Are they just bad decisions?
Yeah, bad throw, kind of more bad throws than bad decisions. Only one of them wasn't on Andy. Cole Kmet bobbled a ball. That should not have been a pick, but it was a pick. But, you know, his first pick was just a high pass, just too high, clanged off someone's finger. The third, he got his arm hit. It's kind of one of those dead dove passes. I guess I don't know if you can blame that on Andy Dalton or not. Like, he got his arm hit, but the fourth was this like an hysterical mistake. Like one of the, they faked a screen to one side and did like the throwback to the other side of the field. And was just like a really easy pickings interception and like a play that should not have been called, but definitely a throw that should not have been made. And yeah, I mean, this was just a guy, this is Wayne. He's a good backup who gets overexposed the longer he's in the starting lineup. And it was kind of just like, you know, the Cardinals pass defense, even without JJ Watt, has like remained an elite pass defense. Mm-hmm. And it's just an elite pass defense feasting on a backup quarterback.
Anything from the receivers jump out to you?
No, I mean, how few of them they had. I mean, the Bears are like deep into Jakeem Grant season. Right? He had five catches. I think that doubled his previous Bears total. There's no one to throw to with Allen Robinson hurt and Marquise Goodwin still hurt. Maybe that caught up to Darnell Mooney, who only five catches on seven targets. The Cardinals kept the lid on the top of the Bears offense. And you know, Darnell Mooney before today had good chemistry with Andy Dalton, where Andy Dalton had the good sense to just relentlessly target him. But Dalton was bad enough today that I kind of think Justin Fields' ribs are going to be magically healed up going into week 14. And it's been a much more inconsistent connection between them. But that has also been with Allen Robinson mostly in the lineup. And A-Rob seems no better than 50-50 to return in week 14.
I hope you're right about that. It would be nice to see Fields back out
there. It would be nice. Is Darnell Mooney a guy who I really need? It appears I'm getting eliminated from my dynasty league where I've been kind of riding Mooney. So yeah, bring Fields back. Bring him back.
Let's see it. The Washington football team defeated the Raiders 17-15. Washington now has back-to-back wins with the final score 17-15, or back-to-back games. Did they win 2 weeks ago?
They did. I think they've won like nine games in a row. They've won at least, I think they've won four.
They've won three in a row, actually, okay. And sit as one of the two wild card spots. That was another note here. So back-to-back wins 17-15. Now they're in the wild card. Everything's looking great for Washington.
Except for this game, it wasn't really fun to watch. There were four field goals and three total touchdowns. Two of them did belong to Taylor Heinicke. He only had one turnover. Should have had more turnovers. He threw a pick six. Like, that would have made this not a three-game winning streak. He threw a pick six right to the Raiders, and they dropped it late in the fourth quarter. So, you know, a game of inches in that regard. And a game where, like, but he was, like, harassed. Derek Carr was also harassed. Like, that was, like, the theme of this game. It wasn't, like, huge sack totals. I think they only combined for, like, three or four sacks, but – like, these guys were getting hammered. They could not sustain drives. There was nothing doing, especially in the first half. It did, thankfully, open up a little bit after the second half. But, you know, from Washington, again, it was establishing the run at all costs. It was third time in four games since their week 9 bye that Antonio Gibson shot past 25 touches. You know, it's totally dominated work, again, without J.D. McKissic. At least five catches each the past 2 weeks. Still was not super efficient. He's looked better. He definitely has looked healthier. But, you know, he's still stuck in like that 3 yards per carry range because this is so many predictable runs. And yeah, he's not quite getting outside as much as you'd like to see, but he looks a lot better and he's making up for a lack of efficiency with raw volume. And I see no reason to expect that to change going forward.
Yeah. And some of that volume being the receiving work, you know, with J.D. McKissic out, that was nice to see. There was a report Wendell Smallwood would get some of J.D. McKissic's role, but, you know, J.D. McKissic was getting a big role because he's really good.
Yeah, he's just actually a good football player. We hate to say, but he is.
Yeah. So I was skeptical that Smallwood, I think everyone was skeptical that Smallwood would, you know, have a J.D. McKissic type role. And we see here that, sure enough, Antonio Gibson got six targets, five receptions, 23 yards and a touchdown. Smallwood just two targets, 2 for 12. So it seems like Smallwood played some, but Gibson, you know, certainly was the first guy in the receiving rotation.
Yeah, when you're playing this kind of offense, like, you need some breather backs. Otherwise, like, your running back's going to die if he's, like, you know, getting, like, 35 touch. But that's all it was at Wendell Smallwood. It was a pure change of pace, pure breather back type of touches.
In the receiving game, I know Logan Thomas had an injury here, right? And he was their leading receiver this week.
Yeah, he was in tears in the fourth quarter, injured his knee. He took a helmet right to his knee. Definitely, he did walk off the field under his own power, so that was good. And he stayed on the sideline after being in the medical tent, but he got the quick rule out. Like, he was visibly distraught. So that was not a good sign for Washington going forward. You know, Ricky Seals-Jones is still sidelined with the hip injury. John Bates did reemerge immediately for two catches after Logan Thomas went down. But, you know, that would be a really big loss. It could finally be then like Curtis Samuel season, but he had three touches today for negative 2 yards. He has only four touches since returning 2 games ago. Like, they're really, really easing him back in. But, like, if Logan Thomas is hurt, you know, J.D. McKissick, we still don't know his status. Ricky Seals-Jones is still hurt. It would seem like it's going to finally be the time. You know, in a game in Week 14 where they're playing the Cowboys, it's probably going to be higher scoring. Like, my early thought for Week 14 in Washington is they're going to have to get Curtis Samuel more involved. And I think that they probably will. He had only one touch last week. He was up to 3 this week. He got a carry on 3rd and 4, like the most important play of the game in the fourth quarter. He only got 3 yards. They had to kick a 48 field goal. They barely made it, but they did. But I'm predicting maybe slash hoping for more Curtis Samuel work in Week 14.
And then anything to note on McLaurin, who had just a super quiet day here?
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on there. I mean, they've gone more. So his catch totals have declined every week since the bye. You know, as they've famously now gone run heavy. It's gone from 6 to 5 to 4 to 3. I mean, Taylor Heinicke did attempt 30 passes today, so that's not really the whole. I mean, nothing was developing down the field because he was under a lot of pressure. He had to roll out a lot. You would have liked to have found. Yeah, it was kind of surprising they didn't hook up in like a big play when Taylor Heinicke got flushed from the pocket. It just seemed like one of those games where it just wasn't happening for whatever reason. And it seems like a potential pretty good bounce back spot in Week 14 against the Cowboys defense that likes to give up big plays. So I would be circling next week as like the get right date for Terry McLaurin, but also like acknowledging that it seems like 10 targets, like that's maybe just a thing of the past now for Terry McLaurin. Cause like, this is an offense, like they're trying to run 35, 40 times a game. And you might have to like readjust down to like 6 to 8 weekly targets being the new norm for Terry McLaurin.
Yeah. He had 5 here, went 3 for 22. So definitely disappointing, but I like that note about Dallas. On the Raiders side, let's start with Carr and the receiving game. Foster Moreau was kind of big time chalk in DFS. He just went 1 for 34 on 3 targets. Hunter Renfrow was scooping up that underneath volume instead, went 9 for 102 on 10 targets. Josh Jacobs also heavily involved, 9 targets, 9 for 38 as a receiver. And then kind of the deeper guys, Brian Edwards went 3 for 30, Zay Jones 3 for 21, DeSean Jackson 1 for 14. So the deep threat's not really connecting this week.
No, the Hunter Renfrow scam, you know, that just keeps printing money. He's had 7 receptions now in 5 of his past 6 games. Season high 9 today. Season high 10 targets, 19.2 PPR points without a touchdown. It's a pretty nice day at the office if you're a PPR scammer. But I would be remiss if I said he also drew a DPI in the end zone and set the Raiders up for a 1 yard touchdown. So you got to give him I mean, I'm joking about like empty PPR points from Hunter Renfrow, but he is just hashtag good at the game. He's very good at getting open. Seems to be a very good football player. So can't hate too much there on Hunter Renfrow. You know, like down the field. So Derek Carr, 38 pass attempts, 249 scoreless yards, only a 2nd scoreless start of the season. Just kind of looks like a quarterback where it's finally taking a toll where he's just like out of weapons, you know, like, I don't know how healthy DeSean Jackson was. He barely spotted. He caught only 1 pass. He was never announced like an aggravation of like his calf issue or anything, but he was just invisible. He had to keep going to Zay Jones in big moments of the game. He had a missed connection with Zay Jones in the end zone. He had a narrowly missed deep bomb to Zay Jones, like the dying moments of the game. One where, frankly, he was probably being interfered with, but it would have been like kind of a soft call, like Twitter would have been apoplectic, but it probably would have been by the letter of the law, correct? Call a guy's jersey tugged. And that would have been like a 60 or 70 yard penalty. But the deep game is just, it's in distress right now for the Raiders. And you know, even the underneath game without Darren Waller. So yeah, no Darren Waller. Kenyon Drake carted with an ankle injury. So Josh Jacobs caught 9 passes, a new career high by 4. You know, Jalen Richard is on the COVID-19 list. So you don't know if they can really transfer over to Week 14, like if they're just going to try to like jam Richard in there if Kenyon Drake is out. But that seemed like the takeaway of the day for the Raiders, the 9 catches for Josh Jacobs. And like you're playing the Chiefs in Week 14, you know there's going to be passing volume. So like that was a big-time development, it felt like, for the Raiders.
Yeah, plus he gets 52 yards on the ground on 13 attempts and scores a touchdown. So really nice day for Josh Jacobs. And, you know, Jalen Richard, like, I don't know. I don't know if he's it's one of those guys where I'm like, oh, Jalen Richard's still in the Raiders. Doesn't feel like he's going to come in and take a ton of receiving volume, although maybe they're just kind of dead set on never letting Jacobs get anywhere near these nine targets again.
Yeah, and he was, you know, he was J.D. McKissick before J.D. McKissick was. Jalen Richard was a pure pass catcher and definitely has pass catching chops. It was a good sign that they didn't jam Peyton Barber in there to catch passes. So that was good. But yeah, I would, before I like fly like the mission accomplished banner on Josh Jacobs, I guess I would keep Jalen Richard in mind. We don't know if he'll play. He was on the COVID list. So, but that was really nice. Yeah, as I said, a new career high by four for Josh Jacobs in the catch department.
That is nice. All right, Patrick Daugherty, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Pat.
The Chargers defeated the Bengals 41-22. Justin Herbert has now thrown 300-plus pass yards in three straight games. Kyle Dvorak, this game was a little lopsided.
Yeah, it was a kind of a weird game. It went from lopsided early. Chargers got on the board early and often. Bengals started surging a little bit, and then ultimately it kind of fell flat, and it once again looked lopsided by the end. Justin Herbert looked really good. I mean, this was one of his better performances. Like just continued going deep, which is something I feel like we've been sort of up and down throughout the year with the team's willingness to push the ball down the field, which is almost surprising given how obviously Brandon Staley just like buys into the analytics movement, goes for a lot of like fourth down type of stuff. But they'll get in these ruts where they don't really focus on these like high leverage, high potential passes. This wasn't the case. They had their way with the Bengals corners. Jalen Guyton had two catches over 30. Mike Williams had two catches over 40, both of which came in the first quarter. This is how you want this offense to be operating. There are plenty of ways for them to succeed, but this feels like the most obvious. Just let Herbert sling it because the dude has a cannon. It's so funny how he's developed almost immediately. Or I think maybe it's more that just the projection on him coming out of college was wrong, but like, the dude just has an arm, and he has the weapons to make the most of it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the long catches from Williams and Guyton. Williams leads the team with 110 receiving yards, five receptions on seven targets. Guyton not far behind with 90 receiving yards. He had four receptions on four targets, and he actually scored a touchdown. Keenan Allen had two touchdowns in this game, but only 5 for 34 on eight targets. So, you know, kind of interesting that Allen, you know, still had an awesome fantasy day, but a little bit back to Williams and, you know, Guyton to some extent, the deep passing game driving this offense. And it seems like that's really what gets Herbert going. So it's been surprising to see them get away from that over the last few weeks and nice to see them get back to it here.
Yeah, it's what gets me going and any Chargers fan going too. This is what we want to see. It's not just how the offense succeeds. It's how they succeed as a fantasy. It's how their fans succeed, right? This is what Herbert is at his best. And like you said, you know, it doesn't always have to be Keenan Allen, right? He can still be used in the red zone. He was so wide open for one of his red zone touchdowns. The other one, a very impressive catch, though. They just have a lot of ways to beat you. But I think the best is when they do it in a myriad of ways. They're not just dumping off Dak, or they're not just dumping off Keenan Allen. That makes the team unsurprisingly predictable. So, me, I think it was one of Herbert's best games of the year. Probably haven't seen all of his games, but I have seen a decent amount of them. It's one of his better games, and it shows in the box scores of everyone really getting there.
What about Austin Ekeler here? He did get in the end zone, went 14 for 59 and a touchdown on the ground, and he also had five receptions for 45 yards on five targets. So a pretty nice game for him. What were your thoughts on him in the backfield?
Ekeler had two fumbles in this game, which is really out of character for him. I was, both of them were just boilerplate fumbles, but it's weird to see him string two of them into one game. But it didn't result in like any sort of benching or anything like I've seen with like James Robinson will fumble and immediately get pulled. His team clearly knows, like as we've seen throughout the year, they rotate their RB2 seemingly every single week. They have no clue who it is. So given that, they're not going to bench Ekeler for 1, 2, 3, 10 fumbles. He could fumble as many times as you want. It's so obvious that he's their best running back, and they don't even know who their second best running back is. He limped off the field late in the game. I mean, the game was way out of hand, so it could be just something very simple, sore, cramping, or it could be something more serious. We just don't know. The game was too late and too out of hand to really tell. So I think Justin Jackson saw six carries, most of which came on the final drive or so. So the split should look, you know, would have looked even better if the game didn't get out of hand. However, it also could have looked different if the game played on more and Ekeler was actually hurt. So we just have to wait and see on that one. I haven't seen anything on it yet.
What about on the Bengals side? What was going on to where, you know, they just weren't able to get that much going, even in a script where, you know, they were going to have to throw the whole game, or most of it, and a passing game that we're excited about, yet they weren't able to be all that productive.
Yeah, there was a few, of, I would say a lot of almost fluky things that happened in the first half. Joe Burrow, right around the time, might have been on the play. I'm not sure I saw what had happened exactly. Joe Burrow gets the rushing touchdown, but immediately after that, goes out, you know, of the game. They didn't bring in the backup quarterback at that time or anything, but goes on the sideline, clearly dealing with some sort of hand thing, practices throwing, and seems to be in like a lot of pain. Sort of like screaming on the sidelines. Trainers tape him up, try a glove, try no, I'm sure they tried no glove, some tape, lots of tape, also glove, all these different combinations. Nothing seemed to be working. And then they end up, you know, they get a drive sort of going at the end of the first half. And then just as like it seems like they have a chance to, you know, throw a spike, then a Hail Mary. The play is just like the drive is just called off, right? They say, just come out of the game. We don't want anything going on with this finger any further. It was, I believe I saw on Twitter, I'm not sure if this is speculation or actually 100% confirmed, but it seemed like this would check out, a dislocated pinky or something of that nature. And he played through the rest of the game and actually played particularly well, but that certainly isn't helpful for him. There were some throws that I thought looked to be a bit errant, and that would check out when you're losing a lot of your grip strength. So they also had, Ja'Marr Chase had like a very comical, bobbles the ball once, twice, and just tips it right to the defender on what would have been a really long pass. I don't think it would have gone into the end zone quite because the defender was on him. That was tough. Then Joe Mixon
probably didn't play Ja'Marr Chase in DFS this week, Kyle, if you think that was comical. That I had a different reaction to that play.
I apologize. I had a lot of the Bengals. So, you know, the Higgins success made up for the Ja'Marr Chase failures. But yes, I do agree. Actually, for most people, like, no, unless you played against Ja'Marr Chase, it probably is not comical. But if you saw it, it was like Yakety Sax Benny Hill style. Like, it was, should have been caught for a long one. It was not, unfortunate. Chase has had some drop issues here, but he's so good. It just doesn't matter. Like, you can't read into any of this too much. And then Joe Mixon got a fumble six, like, kind of ended the game. So lots of weird stuff going on. The Chase egregious drop, the fumble six are things we don't expect to repeat. The Joe Burrow injury probably does linger, but I haven't seen any speculation that would put him out. I think he even said, unless it gets worse somehow, he'll be fine for next week, or playing next week fine might be a stretch.
Thoughts on Higgins' day? Because, you know, you mentioned 14 targets, 9 for 138 and a touchdown. He was the real bright spot here, though Tyler Boyd also had a pretty decent day with 5 for 85 on 7 targets. But Higgins has had a ton of volume really throughout the whole season. He had a nice game last week. Now he's had this even nicer game. Thoughts on him? And, you know, it's my inclination would be that Ja'Marr Chase would still kind of be the clear number one, but Higgins is certainly making a case that they should be viewed pretty similarly.
Yeah, I think we saw this early in the year, then Higgins leaves with the shoulder injury for, I think it was 2 weeks. It wasn't super long. And then Higgins comes back and is pretty sluggish. I think he went a 5-game stretch without topping 100 yards, without catching a touchdown. And as you said, now we have back-to-back really impressive games. I think they are closer to 1A, 1B than sort of that 5-game, which stretch would indicate. But they're also closer to 1A, 1B in the other direction than these previous two games indicate. Now we're in the Ja'Marr Chase slump, just like we saw with T. Higgins. And I think that, you know, given that this is a team that, when possible, are going to establish the run. And when they don't, it might also be because they're not having success throwing. So it's sort of a barbell of sometimes you pass a lot, but it's because you're playing from behind, which means you didn't put points on the board. And when you can, you'll run a lot. So I think this will be a team that, when you have two players who are truly talented enough to be any team's number one receiver, it's going to be a bit of some dry stretches and then some complete explosions, sometimes from both of them, but oftentimes of multiple games where you just don't have success. I can't imagine you are benching Ja'Marr Chase, and you probably shouldn't have been benching T. Higgins coming into this 2-game stretch. Both are just so talented on an offense that is capable of exploding, even if it does ultimately funnel to one player 1 week, one the next. You have to start both.
Yep. And then Joe Mixon, you know, like, if I knew that this script was going to play out ahead of time, I would have thought, well, you know, he's not going to get the volume as a rusher because they're going to be throwing the whole game. And at least he'll be efficient because the Chargers, you know, aren't very good running in run defense. And at least he'll get some more work as a receiver. But that's like the exact opposite happened. He did get volume as a rusher. He got 19 rushes, but he only had 2.8 yards per carry. He goes 54 yards and a touchdown. You mentioned he loses a fumble. And then he only had one target today, didn't catch it. So I don't know what was going on with Joe Mixon. How did he look? I know at one point he came out of the game. Like, was he healthy? Why wasn't he able to take better advantage of the team that everyone really takes advantage of on the ground?
Yeah, so I think probably one of the culprits was simply that it's kind of easy to defend a team when you know exactly what their game plan is going to be. Like, understandably, anytime you get into any sort of deficit, it's difficult to establish much of Joe Mixon. He did. I saw a neck injury somewhere. He looked very hurt and then almost immediately came back into the game. And then as a receiver, I think it's probably like part of the same sort of set of symptoms where how can you afford to, or at least I would argue you probably shouldn't be dumping down to a running back when you're down. I believe they got down 24 points at one point. So also it's like, just got stuffed a handful of times at or behind the line of scrimmage, ultimately finds the end zone, ninth straight game with an end zone. I think that ties or maybe set the franchise record among at least non-quarterbacks. So, you know, I think that's still who he is. A lot of carries. I don't think anyone was ever going to argue he's the most electric back. If you were looking at like him versus someone like Jonathan Taylor and you give them both 19 carries, one of them, Joe Mixon, is so much more likely to just randomly get stuffed a bunch of times, not break a long run and have a quiet day. So I think given that he is not a supreme talent, I think he's very good, but he's not on that elite level. He's also not on that elite level as a pass catcher. We want him to be there to catch some passes. He's not making the most out of them. He's probably the tier two running back who can be stopped in any given week, not the tier one Taylor, where like Taylor, he is so automatic at this point. Mixon, very good. I don't know if you can call him automatic yet.
Yep, that makes sense. Let's move to the second game where the Seahawks defeated the 49ers 30-23. The Seahawks, now the first team in the last 20 seasons to win a game in which they committed two turnovers from the five-yard line and in. Pretty wild stuff here, Kyle.
That's a gem. Yeah, turnovers. I'm trying to think what the turnovers were. One was a Gerald Everett. Oh, well, actually, they're both Gerald Everett. Never mind. They're both Gerald Everett. One Gerald Everett had a should have been a touchdown. Bobbles it. Falls backwards or down. Kicks the ball into the air and a defender gets it. And the other one was just
another yakety sax play. You've got
it was even the curse better. And I can say it was even funnier because not many people were playing Gerald Everett. I hope not.
Yeah, that one was legitimately funny. I think
you can laugh at that one. It was funny. It was good physical comedy from Everett. He had a fumble within the five. It was just a standard fumble on like one of the inside shovel pass type of plays, I believe. Then he had a fumble right around his own 20. So it was just a tough day for Gerald Everett. Both of those turnovers, one technically gets attributed to Russ. It was Russ's only, like, really, at least in the stat line, his only interception, his only bad play of the day, but not his fault. It literally should have been a touchdown.
Yeah, how did Wilson look? Is his accuracy, I made a note of this in the walkthrough, that his accuracy had just been cratering since his return from injury. How did he look out there?
Yeah, I believe he was 30 of 37, should have been 31, as I noted. It was really good, although there were still plays where I thought, I mean, there can't have been that many of them. There was actually specifically one play. He has DK Metcalf deep left side of the field. Would have been a minimum touchdown or minimum of a long gain. Probably could have been a touchdown, though, if it was like the perfectly placed ball, just stopping the defender from knocking Metcalf out. And Russ just kind of sails it wide out of bounds. That was really the one play, though, where, like, I mean, if Russ throws that in the middle of like his peak of MVP, we're like, yeah, you know, he's going to do that every once in a while. But we're nitpicking, or at least I'm nitpicking him more now. Anytime he makes a slightly off throw, I'm like, he's not back. Everyone sound the alarms. Overall, though, it was admittedly a pretty prototypical Russell Wilson game. You know, they just didn't throw a ton of deep shots, even like the Tyler Lockett. The Tyler Lockett 12-yard touchdown looked like it could have been a 30-yard touchdown because of how perfectly the arc was on the ball. Classic moon ball style from Russell Wilson. I wouldn't say he looked 100% back. The DK Metcalf pass, maybe, you know, we talk about things that are or are not funny. Maybe I would be able to accept it more had I not, you know, been looking for DK Metcalf to finally come back in this game. But that one, it was admittedly probably a pretty off throw that should have gone their way. Mostly, though, mostly looked back. Frankly, I think this one, if Russell Wilson looked back, which I would say he did, kind of falls down to pretty terrible play calling from Seattle. I mean, you know, they had a second and I believe 42. It might be 43. It might be 41. But a second and 40 plus rush attempt that was followed up by a third and 30 some odd yard pass short to Tyler Lockett for like 11 yards. Another, I believe I saw second and 19 yards rush attempt. They just played like the most we want to score 16 points and win this game type of football. They won the game. They somehow scored more. Travis Homer actually took a 73 yard fake punt to the end zone, which was pretty awesome. So they scored more than that, but they play it as if they did not want to put up 30 points.
That's because they didn't. What about the backfield here where they really wanted to, you know, get things rolling? And they really didn't. it didn't seem very good. Travis Homer, you know, he leads here with 80 rushing yards, but a 73-yard run helps you get to 80 rushing yards.
73-yard run, 35. Not on offense. Like, that was something I assume the special teams coordinator dialed up. I mean, it will go down as offensive yardage. If you played Travis Homer in fantasy, you get credit for it. But it was not part of the offense in
real life. What was the context of it?
It was a fake punt. I mean, he was a fake punt. I believe he got the direct snap and just took it like they were just completely weren't ready. It was also nice. He looked fast. He looked good. But yeah, it was a fake punt on fourth down. So like not offensive design in any way, really.
Gotcha.
I would argue.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Penny went 10 for 35. And then Adrian Peterson. Why don't you tell us about Adrian Peterson?
Well, Adrian Peterson, if you watch Adrian Peterson with the Titans, you can probably imagine almost exactly how he looked. And his day, although he did score a touchdown, and if you're going to be the goal line back and the team improves, I guess that is nominally worth something. But the day, his 1.5 yards per carry were foreshadowed by a -5-yard first opening carry for the Seattle Seahawks. he's Adrian Peterson. He's 34 years old and he hasn't looked super explosive or really that elusive in 3 or 4 years. And the Titans, you know, despite being down multiple running backs, waived him. So that should tell you all you need to know. I can't imagine at this point, if you were starting Adrian Peterson, like, you know, it's time to start looking at 2022.
Agreed. Let's go to the other side. Let's talk about Elijah Mitchell first here. I believe he was banged up in this game. He goes 22 for 66 with a touchdown on the ground. Got 3 targets going, 3 for 18 through the air. So decently productive day. What did you see from him?
Yeah, he was evaluated for a concussion, but I think I saw him like on the sidelines mouthing the words like, I'm good or whatever. And he came right back in. So it really wasn't much of an issue. Jeff Wilson and I forget who else. It would have been Jeff Wilson, who got hurt in this game as well, but Kyle Shanahan said he's sore, would have been his backup. He was in for like and got 1 long carry, I think called back by holding, so you can't fit in the box score. They really don't have the backups to do anything else but give Elijah Mitchell the football. And that showed, as you said, the only other running back to, I believe, see a touch was Kyle Juszczyk, a fullback, who is really a small part of the game plan. Yeah, he was kind of bottled up in this game. The offense was a bit ho-hum outside of George Kittle, who we'll get to. But ultimately, if you're going to say, even if they don't throw the running backs a ton, even if, you know, Kyle Juszczyk gets some targets, if he's going to see like weekly 20-plus carries, this is a losing effort. He saw over 20 carries and does get the targets when they throw to a traditional running back. Like, he's bordering on RB1 numbers, and he typically does look pretty elusive as well. Was bottled up mostly in this game, had a few chunky runs, but like he typically looks elusive. He gets the ball a ton. Like, I think you could argue he's an RB1.
Nice. Yeah, let's talk Kittle, because he had almost 2 games worth of production here today. 12 targets, 9 receptions, 181 yards, and 2 touchdowns from George Kittle.
Yeah, I think he was coming off a 1-catch game coming into this, and like he could have made up for that game in at least 1 or 2 other games, depending on how you space out his production from this game. Like, he could probably tight end's not a good position. You could literally squeeze out 4 tight end 1 games from these numbers if you space it out right. And oh my god, he looks so good. It is so nice to see George Kittle back. It has been quite a struggling season if you had George Kittle on your teams. I don't know if you're still in it, but at least you can enjoy like finally laying down the lumber. He was yards after the catch. He was going downfield. He was as physical and dominating as always. I mean, he is like when healthy, I think he's arguably the most talented tight end in the NFL. It's just that when you compare him to Travis Kelce, I think he could be better than Travis Kelce. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Kelce gets the benefit of playing with Mahomes. Obviously, we've never seen that from the 49ers, you know. But in this game, he looked every bit of the league's best tight end by far, the most athletic tight end. And he's still a great blocker, which we have no way to measure in his box scores, but he does that quite well too. And I think the biggest point that we have to look at here is just his target dominance, his overall offensive dominance. He saw, I believe it was roughly exactly half of the team's overall yardage, not passing yardage, just like straight up. He was half of the team's offensive production. That's because I would at least believe it's because they're without Deebo Samuel, who I think is a pretty obviously pretty pivotal piece of the offense. But George Kittle also can operate in the similar part of the field, take 5, 6, 7-yard passes from Jimmy Garoppolo and turn them into 20, 30-yard chunk gains. So when you are without someone like Deebo Samuel, I think it logically follows that you have to go to George Kittle. Brandon Ayuk had a fine game, but like I hate to give Shanahan a ton of credit because you can say, you know, what comes first, chicken or the egg? Is Brandon Ayuk not playing a ton, not getting a ton of targets because he's not that good? Or does it fall the other way? His stats don't show up because Shanahan refuses to play him. at a minimum, we can say when Debo Samuel is out, you should probably be throwing to George Kittle a lot and then some Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah, and I think Kittle certainly made the case that the target pecking order was in the correct order this week. I mean, extremely productive, extremely efficient on those 12 targets.
You know what's insane? I was about to type up, you know, Kittle has career day. This is actually his third highest receiving total. He, at his peak, Kittle truly, I think, probably is the NFL's best tight end. Injuries have really kind of marred his previous 2 weeks. And I also hate to be a watch the film guy, but man, when you watch him play, his highlights, I think, are among the best of any tight end of the, like, since like Pete Gronk, really.
Yeah, he's been hyper efficient. You know, he has trouble getting targets because the offense doesn't throw a lot. He actually does quite well.
Yeah, you would know he is consistently like the best, one of the best, like if you were to count as a wide receiver, one of the best wide receivers in yards per route run. Like when they are using him as a receiver or just as a pass catcher, he is like literally the most efficient tight end in the league. Frankly, I wish he wasn't as good of a blocker, so they would only choose to use him to run routes, like, ever.
I know. Trust me, I've had the same thought. But nice to see him get going here, and hopefully we'll see more of it with Debo Samuel out probably another week or two. But Kyle Dvorak, thanks so much. The Eagles defeated the Jets 33-18, a game where Dallas Goedert had his first multi-touchdown game of his career. Danny Carter, Gardner Minshew led the Eagles to victory this week.
He did. And man, judging by fans' reaction after the game, they were excited. But it should be noted that Gardner Minshew was playing against what is probably the worst secondary in all of football, based on EPA, based on any stat you want to cite, right? Anything. And it showed. You know, he hit Dallas Goedert for two lengthy touchdowns on both plays. The Jets just didn't cover Goddard. Like it didn't require an incredible throw. In fact, one of the touchdown throws was underthrown, and Goddard had to stand there and wait for it and then catch it and run into the end zone. A good play on his part, but you know, Minshew didn't exactly like tear up the game here. He didn't blow up in any meaningful way. I think that Jalen Hurts' job will be safe.
Okay, that's probably good. I mean, Minshew seems like a very fun quarterback to come in. He's all amped up. He helps you beat the Jets, and then you go back to Hurts. So that makes sense.
Right. And he, you know, he made smart plays. You know, his big bugaboo in Jacksonville was that he would scramble around and kind of be the poor man's Brett Favre and you know, throw terrible picks on the scramble drills. But today he got in that situation a handful of times, and it looked like he was about to make that sort of throw. And then he would either throw it in the dirt at the receiver's feet, or he would throw it out of bounds. So he was dead set, it seemed like, on not making that backbreaking mistake against a terrible Jets defense.
Thoughts on the receivers? I mean, Goddard obviously with the huge day here, but Quez Watkins goes 3 for 60. He's actually second in yards. Kenneth Gainwell, third in yards, which is a bad sign for Devonta Smith, who only had 2 for 15, trailing both Gainwell, who went 5 for 33, and Miles Sanders, who went 3 for 22, and then Jalen Reagor, an afterthought.
Devonta Smith was a little bit of a surprise here because, you know, he only saw 4 targets. Quez Watkins saw 3. Goddard actually led all pass catchers for Philadelphia with 6. So it was very spread around. Minshew only threw 25 times. Honestly, I'm not sure he threw more than like a pass or two in the fourth quarter. They really just took the air out of the ball once they got a couple score lead on the Jets. So Smith's day was kind of predictable once the Eagles got out to a lead, but still, you know, nonetheless disappointing. Gainwell was surprising because he served as the RB2 behind Miles Sanders, who had 27 touches on the day, 120 rushing yards, of course, no touchdown. He leads the league in touches without a touchdown, by the way, after this game. And that's, you know, obviously Jalen Hurts is a big reason for that. But Gainwell came in, took a lot of the pass catching duty, and then had a rushing touchdown himself, where he sort of maneuvered around defenders and made his way into the end zone from inside the red zone. So that, you know, high value touches for him all over the place. But with Boston Scott back to full health, presumably, excuse me, after the team's bye week, I don't know if Gainwell sees that kind of action going forward. Today, Boston Scott, who had an illness, a non-COVID illness coming into this game, basically didn't play.
Well, I will say it's definitely something to keep an eye on and to see what the beat writers think about, because Boston Scott did have a fumble 2 weeks ago. They kind of lost the Eagles the game. So, did you get a sense of if it was due to the illness or potentially, you know, they might have, you know?
Yeah. I'm not sure. You know, Boston Scott returned a kick, but he was nowhere to be seen. He was active, but nowhere to be seen. So, you know, that is interesting. And I'm sure some, you know, ambitious beat writer will ask that question this week. And we should pay close attention, because if Gainwell sees this kind of involvement, he becomes very valuable in PPR.
For sure. Yeah. Kind of one of those last waiver wire guys, potentially. Yeah. Any thoughts on, I guess we kind of covered Sanders. So let's go to the Jets, which I guess we're sort of like legally obligated to talk about.
Yes, we are.
Zach Wilson throws 38 times for 226 yards, 2 touchdowns and an interception. And Elijah Moore, I guess he's kind of the story here on the Jets side, right?
He is. He is clearly the centerpiece of this offense. 12 targets today. That's almost 36% target share. A week after he drew a 30%+ target share. I mean, last week it only worked out to 8 targets because they didn't pass all that much. But he caught 6 of those for 77 yards and a touchdown. The touchdown was a very short touchdown catch to open the game. Here's the thing, though. Moore's game could have been really big, like 150 yards, 2 touchdowns big. He was this close to catching a deep ball that would have gone for a touchdown, and then another deep ball that would have been a 40 to 50 yard gain, probably not a touchdown, but who knows the way that, you know, he's such an electric playmaker. I think, you know, with Corey Davis's groin injury, he re-aggravated that injury today. He was limping around the entire game. I think that Moore is just the clear cut guy who's going to dominate targets going forward for New York.
All right. That's pretty nice to hear. Tevin Coleman dominated work in the backfield, which is not so nice. 11 rushes, 58 yards. He also had 4 targets going 3 for 19. You know, Ty Johnson was involved, getting 4 targets going 2 for 14. Austin Walter, again, involved, but only 1 rush. Ty Johnson, only 1 rush. And then Walter had 2 targets going 2 for 9. So the other backs were involved as receivers, but Coleman, like a clear lead back, at least in the box score here.
Yeah, and he had a 17-yard run, kind of shockingly effective there. He saw those 4 targets, which was tied with Ty Johnson, but I think it's a little bit misleading there, because 3 of Ty Johnson's 4 targets came in just pure garbage time with the Jets completely out of the game. And, you know, a couple of those sailed right over his head because Zach Wilson was a disaster by the fourth quarter. So I think that if the game had been competitive, I think we would have seen, you know, more touches for Coleman. I know that he's not the most exciting fantasy prospect, but man, I think you could do worse than Tevin Coleman with Michael Carter.
That's technically true.
Yeah.
I do know of someone who started Royce Freeman this week. So definitely worse. And I actually started Boston Scott in an important team because we didn't have any of the running backs. So you could definitely do worse than Tevin
Coleman. I did too. Yeah.
Let's move to the second game here, where the Steelers defeated the Ravens 20-19. The Ravens failing to convert a 2-point attempt, which would have won them the game. Instead, they go down in defeat. The Ravens now have 5 touchdowns in their last 4 games, and Lamar Jackson has 8 picks in those games.
Oh. And he should have had at least one more today. He had the one interception, should have had another. Lamar was under duress throughout this game from start to finish. 7 sacks on the day. He escaped at least 3 or 4 others that should have been sacks. For any other quarterback alive on the planet, it would have been sacks. He tried to make a few Superman plays that just really didn't work out. He missed Mark Andrews down the middle on a play that probably would have gone for a long touchdown. It was another kind of very lackluster performance for Lamar. Although, you know, for fantasy purposes, not terrible. He, you know, 55 rushing yards can make a quarterback stat line look a lot better.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, definitely tough for the receivers. Marquise Brown, 5 for 55. Yeah. Mark Andrews, 4 for 50. Sammy Watkins, 4 for 39 and a touchdown. And then Rashad Bateman, 1 target, but 0 receptions.
Yeah, Sammy Watkins became a thing again today, but only in the final drive of the game. He caught Sammy Watkins caught three of his 4 passes on that final drive, including the touchdown that brought the Ravens to within a point of the Steelers. You know, not a ton of involvement. Things were really spread out today. Mark Andrews led everybody with 9 targets. And then Brown had 7, Watkins had 6. Like you said, Bateman had 1, and he played behind both Devin Duvernay and Sammy Watkins. I don't really know. We didn't see this coming, and it really pushes against kind of the Bateman trending up in that offense. It's something to watch. But you know, if you started him today, you were not expecting that sort of usage.
No, definitely not. Devonta Freeman was a guy, someone I actually did start in an important league. Kind of went the other way, the Boston Scott start, where we weren't expecting him to just kind of dominate the backfield, but he did. He had 14 rushes, going 52 yards and a touchdown. Latavius Murray just had 2 carries for 1 yard. Latavius Murray got 2 targets, going 2 for 34 as a receiver, but Freeman had 8 targets, going 5 for 45. So, what's going on? Do we have a workhorse running back in Baltimore?
I think we do. You know, Devonta Freeman now has at least 17 touches in each of his past 3 games. Latavius Murray, who looks as washed as any running back not named Le'Veon Bell, you know, had 2 carries here. He had 2 catches, one of which went for 18 yards on the slowest 18-yard run of all time.
I saw that, and my reaction was that I think Latavius Murray should convert to tight end.
Why not? Yes. You've been calling for Adam Thielen to convert to tight end. Right? And so let's get Murray as a tight end as well.
We need it. We need more tight ends.
So Freeman saw a ton of work here, shockingly involved in the passing game, 8 targets on the day, including one that was close. There were lots of real close plays for Baltimore. He had one where if he had reeled it in, it would have been a significant downfield gain. Anyway, Freeman's usage is really good for, considering the fact that you probably got him off the waiver wire 3 or 4 or 6 weeks ago or whatever.
I hope you got him off the waiver wire.
Right.
He wasn't
right,
on a team.
No, right. You probably didn't draft him, is what I'm saying. But I have him on a couple teams, and I feel good about him as a volume based RB2.
I mean, he's honestly seems like someone will probably be starting in DFS next week. Is the way this is trending?
Yes, it seems that way.
On the Steelers side, Najee Harris, he goes 71 yards on the ground on 21 rushes. Mm-hmm. He had 36 yards through the air on 5 receptions. Decent production here, but one might call it inefficient.
Yeah. one might put inefficient in a blurb and upset a lot of Steelers fans. but it was a typical Najee Harris day, you know, a 26 touches for a little over 100 yards, no touchdowns. I mean, you know, it's not bad. It's fine. But everything is 3 yards in a cloud of dust with this guy. And he had a long rush of 13. I don't know. I don't know if it's just that the Pittsburgh offensive line is so bad or Najee Harris is not great. I don't know. He doesn't break tackles, and he doesn't force miss tackles. So I'm not sure exactly what is it you do here, Najee, is my question.
He also doesn't break big runs, and he didn't do that in college at all.
No, he doesn't. No, how can he? I can't imagine a scenario where he would break a big run. Everybody else on the field is faster than him. I'm sorry, but it's just like so apparent here. But you know, the team is absolutely committed to getting him 20 plus touches a game. So you go with it, and that's the kind of game he had today.
Yep. Another guy that the team is committed to getting a ton of targets and a ton of touches, Deontay Johnson, and maybe not even the team, might just be a Ben Roethlisberger thing, but 11 targets for Johnson here, 8 receptions, 105 yards, and 2 touchdowns. You know, you got to give him credit, right? Like, he can't, he must be getting open at a high rate, and Ben just can't stop throwing to him.
He was wide open for his 2 touchdowns, and he shook Marlon Humphrey, a stud cornerback who is now out for the year, actually, with a shoulder injury. He shook him hard on both of those touchdowns. And yeah, I mean, he creates separation. He commands these targets, all these targets from Roethlisberger. You know, if he's on the field for 4 quarters, Deontay Johnson is going to see double digit targets. Like that's a guarantee. And that's what happened again today. And if anyone was watching the game, they're probably screaming at their phone right now. Why aren't you talking about the drop touchdown? Deontay Johnson had a horrific drop for what it would have been a 37, 38 yard touchdown on what was probably Ben Roethlisberger's best throw of the entire season, over his shoulder, over double coverage. It was beautiful. And Johnson dropped it. So it could have been just a monster day for Deontay. As it is, you'll take his, what was it? His
105 and 8 receptions.
Yeah, you take that and you don't complain.
No, you don't complain. Although, sounds like a pretty egregious drop.
It was.
What about Claypool and Freiermuth, the other receivers we care about?
Yeah, so Freiermuth is, you know, kind of like every other non-elite fantasy option at tight end, which is, you know, he's touchdown dependent. 4 targets, 3 catches for 26 yards. He split, you know, pass catching duties with Zach Gentry, who, by the way, when he catches a ball, the Pittsburgh fans, they chant Muth for Gentry too. It's like they can't tell them apart. That was the funniest thing I saw all day. But Gentry had 2 catches for 10 yards, and Gentry was in on the Steelers' final drive. I don't know if Freiermuth was struggling with something. I know that he had dealt with a concussion, but that's something to watch going forward. I don't think that he's like the super safe play we thought he would be when Eric Ebron went down to injury. As for Claypool, he had a 40-yard catch in the first half, and that's about it. 3 targets, 2 catches for 52 yards.
All right. I guess that's not a shock, given that Ben Roethlisberger doesn't tend to throw deep. And when he does, Deontay Johnson drops it.
That's right. And when he threw deep, I thought, oh, this has to be Claypool. Nope, it's Johnson. It's always Deontay Johnson. I think that's the answer to the Pittsburgh offense.
It is. All right. Denny Carter, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Subscribe to NBC Sports Edge Plus and get every tool for every game. Now all our premium tools for fantasy, DFS, and betting are included in one subscription at one low price. You can subscribe monthly or save 20% on an annual subscription. We've made it easier than ever with more tools than ever to play and wager with confidence with NBC Sports Edge Plus. The Lions defeated the Vikings 29-27 in a game that snapped a bunch of streaks. The Lions snap a 15-game losing streak. They snap a 9-game losing streak at home. And Jared Goff snaps 12 straight losses, which was the longest streak by a quarterback drafted number one overall. So a big win here for the Lions. I covered this game. And let's start with the Vikings side, actually, because we had a huge performance fantasy-wise from Justin Jefferson. And Justin Jefferson went 14 targets here. On those 14 targets, he had 11 receptions, 182 yards, and a touchdown. In four games versus the Lions in his career, he now has 30 receptions, 503 yards, and a touchdown. Pretty wild stuff for Justin Jefferson. It actually could have been an even bigger day. In particular, Kirk Cousins was kind of late throwing to him deep down the middle on one of his throws. It was a play action pass. So, may have taken Cousins a beat to recognize how wide open Jefferson was, but he also appeared to kind of double clutch before making the throw. As a result, Jefferson still had a nice long reception on the play, but it was the type of play where if he had hit Jefferson in stride, it would have been a touchdown and a long touchdown. So, there was a couple things like that. Another one, Justin Jefferson kind of got a shoestring tackle. It looked like maybe he could have kept going. It was a nice play by the defender, but there were a couple plays where, if it breaks a little bit differently, Justin Jefferson has an even bigger day. Obviously had an incredible fantasy day here. Alexander Mattison also had a nice day, going 22 carries on the ground for 90 yards and a touchdown. He had three targets, three receptions, and 34 yards as well. Not as big a day as we might have hoped for Mattison. Did have a chance for another touchdown, but still a pretty solid day. The big news here, actually, injury-wise, is Adam Thielen, who was revealed, they discovered after the game that the injury that knocked him out early in the first quarter here was a high ankle sprain. So the Vikings are going to be playing on a short week. They have the Steelers coming up and on Thursday Night Football. So I think pretty unlikely that Adam Thielen is able to play there and, potentially the type of thing that could have him missing multiple weeks. So keep an eye on that. And that's one of the reasons why Jefferson had 14 high targets, which tied his season high. KJ Osborne also got more involved as a result of the Thielen injury. He had 7 targets, had 4 receptions for 47 yards and a touchdown. Tyler Conklin had 9 targets here, going 7 for 56. I think both Conklin and Osborne definitely more interesting with Thielen out, for the next game or however long it ends up being. So overall, I think, decent day here for the Vikings offense, but some missed opportunities. On the Lions side, Jared Goff played well at times. He had some nice throws. In particular, he had a nice touchdown throw to TJ Hockenson where he looked off the defender. He also had kind of a throw to Brock Wright, another tight end that he zipped in, hit him on the shoulder, kind of the only place he could have put it because he was well covered. So, pretty decent job by Goff. He also struggled, though, in the second half for most of the second half, but leads the team down at the end of the game and gets them in the end zone with a throw that was another pretty nice throw, kind of a dart throw to Amon-Ra St. Brown for the game-winning touchdown. Weirdly, they didn't have the Lions kick an extra point here. I think technically they were supposed to have them kick the extra point after they scored the touchdown, so they should have won 30-27, but they did not do that. So I don't know if there are any betting implications on that, but that's why it's 29-27. Amon-Ra St. Brown leading the way for the Lions. He had 10 receptions for 86 yards and a touchdown on 12 targets. Kind of looking like the go-to guy in this game. TJ Hockenson had a nice game, going 4 for 49 on 8 targets
and a touchdown. Josh Reynolds also involved, 4 for 69 on 7 targets. Khalif Raymond only had 2 targets in this game and definitely appears to be getting, I think Amon-Ra kind of eating into his potential targets there as he's starting to emerge a bit. Jamal Williams, not particularly involved as a receiver in this game, which hurt him. He only had 1 target, going 1 for 9. And he did have the vast majority of rushes, 17 rushes for 71 yards, but doesn't get in the end zone. Jamar Jefferson still involved here. He had a 5 for 18 on the ground. You also had Godwin Eye, who had he had 2 carries for 8 yards. He also had 2 targets, 1 reception for 13 yards. So not exactly a 3-way split here. I mean, Jefferson or Williams definitely led the way, but there were two other backs who got mixed in. Jamar Jefferson only stole 1 target. So 3 targets in total, though, that didn't go to Jamal Williams, and he only had the 1 target, which definitely hurt him. Not like a complete workhorse back when Swift is out, is my takeaway from this. But, congrats to the Lions, who get their first win of the season. Let's get to the second game I covered for us, where the Dolphins defeated the Giants 20-9. And this is a game that kept some streaks alive, the Dolphins winning their 5th straight. Their defense has now allowed 17 points or less during that 5-game win streak. Let's not give them too much credit for this defensive outing, however, because they were playing Mike Glennon. And Mike Glennon was actually diagnosed with a concussion after this game. I'm not sure when that concussion occurred. He finished the game, and so it happened at some point during the game, but I'm not sure when. He looked terrible throughout. He had only 1 interception in this game, but it was a bad one. It was down the sideline to Darius Slayton into double coverage, like true double coverage, where 2 defenders were both stride for stride with Darius Slayton. It was really a terrible decision. Never should have been thrown. And Mike Glennon overall had 44 pass attempts, throwing for just 187 yards on 44 attempts. I mean, just complete inefficiency from Glennon here. He had another throw over the middle, almost got Darius Slayton's head taken off, like a true hospital ball. And luckily, Slayton avoided a major hit. So that was fortunate, but just another terrible decision. He had a near interception to Kenny Golladay, where he just didn't see an underneath defender that could have easily picked it. Golladay didn't do anything wrong, nor did Slayton on the actual interception. It was just a terrible decision by Mike Glennon. And then it got kind of laughable where later in the game, Mike Glennon, he had the route concept, and this was in the red zone. And so the route concept was that Kenny Galladay's on the left side of the formation. I believe Darius Slayton was the other receiver on the right side, and it's 2 crossing routes. So they're coming across the middle of the field. It's basically, you got 2 cornerbacks and then the safety, whichever one the safety goes with, you're not going to throw to that receiver. You're going to throw the other guy. So the safety goes with Kenny Golladay. And at that point, when Glennon releases, the cameraman pans over to the receiver in one-on-one coverage, like instinctively reading the defense and assuming that's where the quarterback's going with the throw. Mike Glennon throws the cross to the other side of the field in the end zone where Kenny Golladay is double covered. Of course, it goes incomplete. We didn't even have a great angle on it because the camera was over on the other side of the field. So that was like the real low point for Glennon, where even the cameraman's reading the defense better than him. Evan Engram led in receiving yards here with 61. I should note Golladay, who had 37 receiving yards, 2nd on the team, missed a bunch of the first half with a ribs injury, went to the locker room, was the type of thing where you didn't expect him to come back out. Looked like he was done for the day, came back out and played on the first drive of the second half and then played the rest of the way for the Giants. So he was toughing it out through the ribs injury. And that is, I think, to some extent why his receiving yards are a little bit down, but also just down because of Glennon's really poor day. The other receiver here, you know, Darius Slayton was technically the secondary receiver here, but he only had 2 for 13 on 7 targets. Farrah Cooper actually was the wide receiver 2 in terms of production with 3 for 21 on 3 targets. Obviously, Sterling Shepard and Kadarius Toney both out with quad injuries for this game. Saquon Barkley had 11 rushes for 55 yards. He also had 6 receptions for 19 yards on 9 targets. And so, you know, decent, but he ceded 6 rushes to Devontae Booker. He ceded 4 targets, and Booker went 4 for 18 on those. It's just too much, you know, with this kind of offense. That if Barkley's going to give up 10 touches to another running back, it's just not, he's just not going to be able to have a great day. He did have some nice runs. He had a really interesting run on a 7-yard gain where he did a spin move and kind of leaped at the end of the spin move. It was like a spin leap, got the first down on the run. He had a nice 10-yard run where he's totally bottled up, and then he got to the outside. He had another long run, 23-yard run. He looked pretty good on. So, you know, Barkley still looks pretty good to my eyes, but it's just a really bad situation right now and unclear now who his quarterback will be next week. Moving to the Dolphins side of things, Jalen Waddle was the engine of the passing offense here, going 9 for 90 on 11 targets. He was knocked out of the game on kind of a scary looking play, but it was nothing to worry about. Ultimately, he kind of got twisted and we were worried about his knee, but it was just cramps reportedly. So he did leave the game, came back out on the sideline. He should be totally fine going forward, but he had a really nice day here. And Devontae Parker also came back and looked pretty good in his return. He was connecting with Tua on some kind of back shoulder throws, and they look pretty dialed in. 5 targets here for Parker, 5 for 62. Mike Gesicki had 11 targets here, going 7 for 46. He did not look so dialed in. He had I wouldn't say a terrible drop, but it was definitely not a good, you know, it was a true drop over the middle of the field where he had to jump for the ball, but it hit him in the hands. He should have caught it. And then he also had another play where he was in the end zone, potential touchdown, and the defender got his hand up, but didn't touch the ball, I don't believe. And then it was enough to distract Gesicki, though, and the ball actually went through his hands and bounced off his helmet, you know, and that was truly like a potential touchdown that Gesicki dropped. So, you know, definitely some missed opportunities for him. The touchdowns here, and Tua did throw 2 touchdowns. They don't go to any of the fantasy relevant guys. Mac Hollins caught a touchdown. He got wide open and kind of the side / corner of the end zone. He almost dropped it. He bobbled it, kind of resecured it as he was starting to fall, and managed to get possession before going out of bounds. So near disaster, because he was truly wide open. And then Isaiah Ford gets the other touchdown. He just kind of happened to come open as Tua used his mobility within, off the top of my head, I'm not sure exactly where he was, but I believe inside the 10-yard line, used his mobility to move over to the left side and kind of force the defense to account for him. And then Isaiah Ford came open. I think that was actually a 2-yard touchdown. So yeah, so very close to the end zone there. And then Myles Gaskin, he had 15 rushes here, 44 yards. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, because Philip Lindsay was out, he thought he might have, you know, a nicer day. But Salvin Ahmed, he had 8 rushes for 23 yards. So getting a fair amount of work, even with Lindsay out. Gaskin, I don't think, is ever going to be like a true workhorse. This wasn't, you know, it was a pretty good setup for him. The Dolphins were ahead for most of this game. It was kind of a low scoring game, kind of a game where both teams had decided there weren't going to be many points scored, it felt like at times. But Gaskin also got 2 targets, going 2 for 5 yards, continues to be involved in both phases. Although Tua did have 41 attempts in this game, so he wasn't heavily involved. At the same time, Ahmed was not targeted. So Gaskin still clearly leading the backfield for what that's worth, but that'll do it for the Giants and the Dolphins. The Buccaneers defeated the Falcons 30-17. Tom Brady now 10-0 in his career over the Falcons, and the Falcons are now winless, or continue to be winless, at home this year. So given that, John Daigle, I'm not sure what else we should have expected here.
It's not just this year. They've actually gone a full calendar year now, 371 consecutive days without a win in the city of Atlanta. But the Bucs, after that letdown performance last week, came out and established their dominance from the very beginning, actually threw 14 consecutive passes on their opening drive. And that included Leonard Fournette still being involved heavily in the passing game, a clutch 6-yard receptions to move the chains on 4th and 4 from Atlanta's 38-yard line, since Tampa Bay was very aggressive. And then, of course, Fournette capped that drive with a 3-yard, one-handed touchdown grab. Brady did have one mistake here in the first half, his 5th consecutive game with an interception, and that was just a 3-yard thick six from the 3-yard line as DT, the interior lineman, took it in for a touchdown. But overall, it was smooth sailing to begin with. The Falcons actually opened with a touchdown on their first possession from Mike Davis, also getting a few big runs from Cordarrelle Patterson, seeming like, okay, we have a shootout on our hands. They only scored 3 points the rest of the way after that. So, again, not threatening at all. The Bucs just cruised and were the Bucs we expected to see last week, actually.
Yeah, and Chris Godwin really led the way through the air. He had 15 catches, the most catches by any player in a game this season. 17 targets, 15 catches, 143 yards for Godwin. Mike Evans had 99 yards, 7 receptions on 10 targets. And then Gronk had 2 touchdowns, going 4 for 58 on 8 targets. And you mentioned Leonard Fournette, who also had a touchdown, going 7 for 48 on 8 targets, which pretty much those 4 players really accounted for all of the receiving production. Tom Brady throwing for 368 yards and 4 touchdowns.
And
I mean, that's what it seems like, the fine on all cylinders here.
Yeah, and that's what it's going to be without Antonio Brown for the next couple of games as well. There is no Tyler Johnson. There is no Jalen Darden. There's just no one but these 4 players, and there doesn't need to be. Gronk, actually, his 89th and 90th career touchdown pass from Brady in this one, which now makes them the 2nd most touchdowns between 2 players, passing Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates, and still behind Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison. Also, Gronk's 1st touchdown since week 2 for Brady now gives him 6 on the year. Fournette, if we just keep moving along here, handled 20 of 24 backfield touches, including 13 of Tampa Bay's 15 running back carries, and has at least 4 consecutive games now with at least 6 targets, averaging 7.8 in that span, as he continues just to be heavily involved in the passing game as well. And then Godwin, not only 15 catches for the most since week 11 last year, but also a franchise record, passing Ernest Graham, who previously had the record for the Bucs at 13 in one game. So overall, just big days for everyone. Even Mike Evans, who had like a 20-yard gain left on the field, he was open in cover 2 along the sideline, and Brady missed him. So beyond a few little mistakes like that, like it was 51 scheme passes for the Bucs compared to just 15 running back carries. It was very clear what their game plan was in this one, and everything worked. Every single thing worked.
Yeah, and you mentioned things kind of falling apart on the Falcons' side. One guy that had a really nice game was Russell Gage. He had 11 receptions for 130 yards on 12 targets. Not someone we generally think of as like a spike week type of guy, but this certainly qualifies.
And it's been fairly consistent without Calvin Ridley. Whether we want to or trying to consider Kyle Pitts the number one receiver, it's just not the case. Like, Gage is the one who's averaged 7.5 targets in his last 5 games without Ridley, and now has 38 targets to Pitts' 32 in that time, also being used in the red zone. Pitts still just 1 red zone target in those 5 games without Ridley. They're just not using him at all. So it's very clear, for better or worse, likely for worse, that Gage is the number one receiver. He has a very high floor for a team that just can't get it done elsewhere on the field. And him and Patterson are essentially the only 2 players that matter in this offense. Pitts, you can still continue starting him for his perceived ceiling if you want over these other low-end tight end ones. Usage-based guys like Noah Fant, who also like is running less routes with Albert O, clearly healthy. Foster Moreau, who plays every single snap without Darren Waller. But really, it's just all the same. You're just such nitpicking guys hoping for a touchdown and nothing more.
What did you see from Patterson in terms of his usage? He had 13 carries here, 78 yards,
on the ground. He had 5 targets, 3 for 18. Last week, he was kind of more back in the backfield role. Was he still kind of a classic running back this week, or a little bit more of the hybrid role that we'd seen earlier in the season?
It actually was encouraging since, remember, 2 weeks ago, Kadri Ellison had that big game in place of Patterson. And they said, okay, we're going to get, that was the report, we're going to get Ellison more involved, actually. Scratch last week because he had a non-COVID illness that kept him out of practice and stuffed on the practice squad, so they couldn't call him up. Call him up this weekend. Healthy scratch Dwayne Gallman. That's whose place he took. And even then, Ellison still only had 3 touches, whereas Cordero Patterson had 16. So it's just very clear they're going to keep using Patterson heavily. Mike Davis's touchdown was a long one on that first drive, but he was on the field because Patterson got them into Bucs territory with a 20-plus yard gain on the ground right beforehand. So overall, this is still Patterson's offense, honestly.
All right, let's move to the second game that you covered for us, where the Rams defeated the Jaguars 37-7, the Rams' first win since beating the Texans in Week 8.
And another dreadful start, actually. Scary in the first half of the Rams, going 0 for 6 on third downs, seeing Stafford complete just 13 to 22 passes for 139 yards with Ben Skowronek as his leading receiver with 135-yard catch. Fortunately, the third quarter became the Cooper Kupp show. 43-yard grab on their second play in the third quarter. Not only that, but he totaled, actually, in that 15-minute stretch, 4 catches for 99 yards and a touchdown. And although Stafford did eventually connect with Van Jefferson for a touchdown, Odell Beckham for a touchdown as well, which was actually the first time Odell Beckham has scored in consecutive games now since the 2019 season in Week 16 and 17. But overall, we've now seen 2 games with Beckham as a full-time player in this offense. Cooper Kupp no longer holding that 38% target share he was latching onto with Robert Woods to start the year, but still in these 2 games, and it is a small sample, but 2 games, 26% target share of the overall targets leading the team. Van Jefferson at 22.5%, Beckham just under 20%, although Beckham is dominating with 33% of the team's air yards in that span. And so overall, that's how it's shaking out, with Tyler Higbee also involved with a 14.5% target share. And these are the players they are leaning on. I still think while Jefferson is a higher floor than Beckham, Beckham's ceiling is higher. The issue is, like, so many people have questions about, do we start Jefferson or Beckham? And just the answer is, I mentioned this on the Sunday Morning Start Sit show, so I'll just reiterate it here. Only a room filled with monkeys on typewriters with an infinite amount of time could eventually get Van Jefferson or Beckham right. We could take another 7 years to try and guess that every Sunday morning, and we'll never get it right. There's genuinely no way to know. So just pick one and hope for the best, because they're both awesome plays. But if you can't start both, then don't even waste the energy you have in a finite lifespan to think about which one to start.
Yeah, and I think you kind of want to start, like, if you're double stacking, right, you probably do need to just, like, flip a coin and pick one, because it's like there's not enough here for triple stacks generally where they're priced and everything. So I agree. It's impossible to pick, but you got to do it.
And we'll see what Pro Football Focus comes out with their routes run in this one. But recall just last week, they all literally ran the same number of routes too. So, like, there's no way to distinguish who was the better play here. You know, especially if Beckham continues holding on to a 20% target share and continues to lead the team in downfield targets, like, that makes him not so volatile either. That gives him ceiling performances that we may not be able to project. They're just all genuinely awesome plays as long as this offense clicks. Now, they were playing the Jaguars, so we can all settle down a bit.
Yeah.
But another fun matchup if we get a shootout with the Cardinals on Monday Night Football next week.
Yeah, and it looked to me, just from what I caught, that maybe when Ben Skowronek was on the field, it was coming at the expense of Beckham more than Jefferson, but I don't know if that's right. But to your point, that's something that we should definitely be checking out, because if that's the case, or, you know, even if the reverse is true, and we see like a routes run advantage for one of Jefferson or Beckham, that would be very helpful to know how to play this going forward. Let's talk about Sony Michel, who had 121 rushing yards on 24 attempts, also got in the end zone. And then he also had 3 receptions for 8 yards on 4 targets. Took over the full backfield here. I mean, you know, we saw, like, Jamal Williams, for example, didn't get, like, the full workhorse role with DeAndre Swift out. Sony Michel absolutely did.
Daryl Henderson, they said, was active for emergency situations. It was very similar to Taysom Hill 2 weeks ago in that he was active only because, like, Ian Book is their backup, and you can't have that. In this case, Mekhi Sargent has only been with the Rams 2 weeks. You can't have him as your true backup. So Daryl Henderson had to be available. But it was very clear from the beginning he wasn't going to be involved. Didn't play a single snap in this one, whereas Michelle logged a season-high 97% of the team snaps, became their first 100-rushing-yard performer on the year. And then actually, Next Gen Stats had him facing a stacked box with 8-plus defenders on half of his 24 carries, and he actually recorded 54 yards, an above-average outcome on those runs. And Sargent, meanwhile, handled just 2 touches behind Michelle's 27. When he reached Sean McVay, the locker room for post-game press conference, he glowed. He spoke so high of Michelle. So if this has not become a timeshare, at least, maybe it just the pendulum swings in complete favor of Michelle, but it doesn't seem like Michelle's going away. But what we do know now is what we pretty much knew before, but now we have certainty of it, is that when Henderson's out, Michelle is truly an RB1.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the Jaguars. And I have notifications coming through on some of these blurbs here, which is a little bit hazardous to do while you're also recording this recap podcast, because I almost lost it when your blurb came through on James O'Shaughnessy, end times, colon, O'Shaughnessy leads Jaguars in targets. And he did. He had 6 targets here, only went 2 for 13. Laquan Treadwell was the team's leader in receiving yards with 62, 4 receptions on 5 targets. So it was that type of day where if it's not O'Shaughnessy, it's Treadwell.
To be fair, the seventh circle of hell didn't fit in the CMS in the headline. Did not enough characters. So I had to go with end times. That's usually my go-to for when something is absolutely dreadful. Nonetheless, though, this is a Jaguars team who falls to 2-10 on the season, have lost 4 straight and averaged 12 points per game in that span. Those 10 losses, by the way, are twice as many as Urban Meyer ever lost in 17 seasons coaching in college. Just a dreadful performance in his rookie NFL coaching season. Laquan Treadwell the past 2 weeks has become the number one receiver, even though O'Shaughnessy did lead the team in targets. But again, 13 yards because he's James O'Shaughnessy. And yes, Treadwell, of course, doubling up Laviska Shenault, who was still the slot receiver, but not earning targets. Marvin Jones now 6 consecutive games, not exceeding 53 receiving yards without a touchdown. It is dreadful from the top down. You would even think that, okay, at least there's James Robinson. James Robinson fumbled on one of the first possessions and then got benched for the next 20 plays in a row. And that just happened to be one of the drives that the Jaguars reached, the only drive they reached the goal line, and Carlos Hyde instead punched it in and eventually out-touched James Robinson 10-9. Hyde did fumble in the fourth quarter, so maybe he ends up in a doghouse, but overall, this is an absolute disaster.
Worst NFL debut, Urban Meyer or Trevor Lawrence, who threw for 145 yards here, going 16 for 18?
Well, since we can blame the top down, we're sticking this one on Urban Meyer and still treating Trevor Lawrence as the golden child.
I'm not treating him as the golden child, but I agree. It's Urban. It's Urban. Anything else here, or can we get out of here?
No, this is the end times. We're done talking about the Jaguars.
We're done. John Daigle, thanks.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn?
Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
We're headed down the back stretch of the NFL season, and the NBC Sports Predictor app powered by PointsBet has you covered with Sunday Night 7. We're giving you a shot to win $1 million every Sunday through the rest of the regular season. It's free and easy to play. So predict what will happen between the Bears and Packers for a chance to win. Download today from your app store or visit NBCSports.com/predictor. The Colts shut out the Texans 31-0. The Texans now the first team since the 2002 Panthers to be shut out twice in the same season. Colts led by Jonathan Taylor, who scored a touchdown in 10 straight games. This is now the longest streak since LaDainian Tomlinson's 18-game touchdown streak from 2004 to 2005. Rivers McCown, you didn't seem super excited to have watched this game.
Well, I was watching this game. What happened was the Colts were winning, and then they kept winning, and then they're winning by more. And I was like, stop the fight, but they kept winning. And yeah, it wasn't much of a game.
Yeah, there is no NFL mercy rule. So they do play four quarters no matter what. And good thing for Jonathan Taylor, who rushed 32 times here for 143 yards, got two touchdowns. I don't see him targeted. So all of his production coming through the ground, but are coming on the ground. But of course, you know, to be expected with a 31-0 blowout win.
Yeah, his longest run was only 16 yards. So a lot of what he was doing was against A-man boxes. The Texans really tried to just put as many guys in the box as they could to stop him. And they still didn't really do a good job of it, did they? So there's that. Taylor obviously one of the best backs in the fantasy football. You're going to start him no matter what. You want him on your DFS squads if you can afford him. And gave people what they pay for today.
He sure did. Carson Wentz didn't have to do a whole lot, only threw for 158 yards on 22 attempts. Not a terrible day, you know, from an efficiency standpoint, but obviously not a productive day. Michael Pittman soaked up most of the receiving volume, going 77 yards with six receptions on eight targets. What did you see from Carson Wentz and his receivers?
Well, they didn't have to throw the ball long at all, unlike last time when they played the Texans and got some deep shots in. They kept it all underneath, and Michael Pittman was the main target. He also had a couple of in-arounds, got like 30-something rushing yards too, so that helps you out. I think that really showcases just that Pittman is a rock-solid wide receiver too at this point. Like, he definitely can be relied on even in these small-volume matchups.
That makes sense. Okay, let's venture over to the Texans side of things. And tell me about Tyrod Taylor, because he got hurt in this game, right?
So he hyperextended his wrist, is what David Culley said after the game. But at the same time, after he left the game, they did not actually give him an injury designation. So it's kind of like, I'm not sure who to believe here, or you know, they said he couldn't grip the ball, okay? But then why wasn't he injured? So it's really hard to tell. He was not playing well, obviously. And Davis Mills came in and also did not play well.
Okay, let's talk about the tight ends, because Farrell Brown got five targets going 4 for 23. Brevin Jordan got four targets going 2 for 7. Like, obviously, we're not excited to play Texans, but maybe if we could get a tight end, you know, it's a tough position to fill. Maybe a cheap DFS punt. Like, is there anything coming out of here value-wise with these tight ends combining for nine targets?
Jordan had the longer targets. He's the upside guy, I feel like, in this offense. A lot of what Farrell Brown did was underneath, the dump off, kind of come off blocking to catch a check down sort of thing. He's not really going to be involved in any kind of high leverage situation. I think you want Jordan for that. But in this game, of course, the Texans could get nothing going. They did not complete a pass to a wide receiver until the third quarter. So,
wow,
that happened.
That's a note. Brandon Cooks was the wide receiver. He had six targets, three receptions, 38 yards. I assume that's who they completed a pass to, because I don't really see
like any other wide receivers in the box. Sure.
No.
I like literally don't think another wide receiver caught a reception.
Correct.
In the whole game. Wow. Okay. Chris Conley had 4 targets. Nico Collins had 1, but like literally no other receptions. Backfield. Rex Burkhead had 8 carries for 30 yards. Royce Freeman had 3 for 10. Burkhead had 2 targets, 1 for 15. Freeman had 1 target, 1 for 11. I guess like Burkhead doesn't even really have this backfield to himself, which is the only way he would have value.
Yeah, Freeman got, I want to say, about 35% of the snaps in this one. He was not as uninvolved as you might have thought from the last couple of games where he was just kind of third back out of the picture entirely. So, yeah, Burkhead does have somebody playing with him. And unfortunately, he's still Rex Burkhead, so you're not going to play him if he has 50% of the snaps.
And I joked in the walkthrough this week that we might see Trent Richardson on the field for the Texans by week 18. We did see Jalen Samuels this week. So they do just keep unearthing names from the past in a way that's pretty interesting and I feel like is only going to keep escalating.
Darius Jackson's on the practice squad if you want an eye out on the next one.
Let's get Niall Davis in there.
Niall Davis, man. The Texans are down bad. That's all I've got to tell you.
They're down bad. Yes, they are. Christian Michael. Let's get Christian Michael in there. Let's just try to think of any running back bust I can. But I think that'll do it, Rivers McCown, unless there's any other notes on the Texans or Colts that we should
get. Oh, no. Feel free to stick this to the back of the show where nobody will listen to it. Godspeed. Right.
At the very end. Okay. Thanks, Rivers. All right. That'll do it. Thanks so much for listening. Make sure to check out all the other pods on our podcast network. In the meantime, please rate and review the podcast. That would really help us out. And we'll see you next week.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.